Good evening.
Good evening.
Please join me in saying the Anabi Torah.
Okay.
Anabi Torah, Gedulat Shemincha, Tatir, Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Ahaleinu Nola Ufrei Shayim Sintet Nun Nad Yibor Dorshe Yehudha Shamrim Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. We'll utilize the sequence Yud Kaf Shin to take any part of our body that needs healing back to its stem cell state, where it will be cleansed, where it will be rejuvenated, where it will be healed. And then we'll return it to its body space, where it will be allowed to be active and do its job. Barhem tacharem rachamei sitkatcha tami gamlem betet reish tzaditav gimel kasim kadosh berotuka nael adatach et kufet. The letters of the month of Tishrei, the Pei, that created the planet Noga, the planet Venus, and the Lamed that created the constellation Mosnayim, the scales, the Libra. Yachid Geyeh Lamcha Pene Zofre Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf Shabbatenu Kabel Ushmata Katenu Yodea Talumah Shin Kufav Tzadi Yutah V'samti Makom L'ami L'Yisrael Undati Vishakam Tachtal Velo Yerkaz Od Velo Yosifu Vene Avla Le'anoto Kasher Barishona. And I will appoint a place for my people Israel and will plant them, that they may dwell in a place of their own and be moved no more. Neither shall the children of wickedness afflict them any more as at the first. In the eighth verse, we say in a whisper, I'm reading from the Zohar, from section 10, division of Rabbi Chiya. I'm reading verse 56. Liafra Uvat Beitin Behavu Shata Biblat Mea Vetishin Lekin Bekoho Velatin Vezai Kamei Yorid Vimin Lauda Benaflein Undirin רציחים כאשה לגוי המערבה, ומינון דינים קיים, ארון מנה דרמה, להתקיים בקדיש, שמי דמלכה קדישה, לקבל עליה מבלה, כל מימור בבראשית, ויקנוס לאכול לגבי בשעתה. והתקמשון כל המאיה על המא קדישה, ועם אדון מימיה ויעזרים, ועם גיבי. The angel Memtet swore that he heard from behind the curtain how the king attends the gazelle every day and remembers how she lies in the soil of the earth. At that time, he kicks 390 heavens, which all quake and tremble with fear because of him. And he, the king, sheds tears because of this. That is, that the Shekhinah lies in the soil of the earth, and the tears that are hot as fire fall down into the great sea. By the power of these tears, the governor who rules the sea, and is called Rahab, is sustained and stays alive. And he sanctifies the name of the Holy King by taking it upon himself to swallow all the waters of the days of creation. He gathers them all within himself so that on that day, when all the nations assemble against the holy nation, the waters may dry up while they cross over on dry land. This verse is referring to some verses in prophecy. The 390 worlds relate to the word tal, which means dew. And dew is something that relates to the coming of Mashiach. And the 339, that is the gematria of tal, is actually the gematria of yud, he, and vav. When it's spelled out, yud is 20, he is 15, and vav is 6. My mistake. He is with an aleph, so it's 6. So you have yud and he, which is 20 plus 6 is 26. And then you have vav, which is 13, vav aleph vav. And so the total is 39, having to do with the energy of tal, the energy of Mashiach manifesting. Does anybody have any questions? The handout tonight comes from the 10 Luminous Emanations class in the Revealed Wisdom Matrix. The second column from the left, I think it's row 10 or row 9. And then if you scroll down to the 8th class, you'll have the link says the 10 Luminous Emanations Class 8 handout, which brings you to Section 41, as we left off last time was Section 40. So I plan to start reading at Section 40. Before I start, does anybody have any questions? Section 40. First, we must understand the words of our sages from Megillah 6b, who said, I labored and found. Believe. I did not labor and found. Do not believe. We must ask about these words, labored and found. They seem to contradict each other. Since labor refers to work and exertion, that one gives in return for a desired possession. For an important possession, one makes great efforts. For a lesser possession, one makes lesser efforts. Its opposite is to the find. Its conduct is to come to a person absent-mindedly and without any preparation in labor or toil or price. Hence, how do you say labored and found? And if there is effort here, it should have said labored and purchased, or labored and secured, and not labored and found. My commentary. These quotations are quite famous and are discussed in the commentaries to the Pirkei Avot, as well as in other places. When one reaches a level of connection to their higher self and their unconscious information that one needs to know what is the right thing to do just arrives in one's mind. This is my opinion, is the concept of found. It is the effect of the labor in doing and living by the Torah. This is my opinion. Section 41. The Zohar writes about the text, "And those that seek me shall find me, and ask, where does one find the Creator? They said that the Creator is found only in the Torah." Also regarding the verse, "Verily, thou art a God that hidest thyself," that the Creator hides himself in the Holy Divinity. We must thoroughly understand these words. It seems that the Creator is hidden only in corporeal things, and conducts, in all the futilities of this world, which are outside the Torah. Thus, how can you say the opposite, that he hides himself only in the Torah? There is also the general meaning that the Creator hides himself in a way that he must be sought. Why does he need this concealment? And also, all that seek him shall find him, which we understand from the verse, "And those that seek me shall find me." We must thoroughly understand this seeking and this finding. What are they, and why are they? To understand the word futilities, please read Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, the first chapter. It is usually translated as vanities. The Hebrew word is actually hevel, which means breath. But it also has different translations, different meanings. In that verse, the first verse in chapter 1 of Kohelet, there are 7 vanities mentioned. Most people do not see 7 because they do not read plural as at least 2. The phrase says vanity of vanities is 3 vanities. You will be able to follow the balance if you read the Kohelet verse. There are 7 vanities, 7 breaths mentioned. That 7 is the 7 sephirot, one of the ways to understand Kohelet. We lack the Hebrew that is being translated here as futilities. I'm sure it's hevel, but I can't be certain because I don't have the Hebrew copy.
I looked it up. I did look it up. I didn't get to look up seeking and finding, but I did this a couple of weeks ago. But I wrote off to the side havel, havalim.
When you said you looked it up, were you looking in the dictionary or were you
looked in Kohelet and I looked up the Hebrew. And what I thought said vanities of vanities was havel, havalim.
Yes. It's hevel, which means breath. It's the name of the sun. But I'm referring to the Hebrew that Rabbi Ashlag's book is written in. I don't know what Hebrew word they're using to translate as futilities.
Okay.
That's what I'm referring to.
Right.
My copy of the Rabbi Ashlag's Esther Sefirot is in storage. And until I have access to it, and the only place I can get that access is if somebody has another copy, or if I, you know, get to my storage location, which is very rare. In the meantime, we'll just have to use what we have.
Okay.
Section 42. Indeed, you should know that the reason for our great distance from the Creator and that we are prone to transgress his will is for only one reason, which became the source of all the torment and the suffering in the world, and for all the sins and mistakes that we fall to. Clearly, by removing this reason, we will instantly be rid of any sorrow and pain. We will immediately be granted adhesion with him. Cleaving to him is a better word than adhesion. With him in heart and in soul and in might, as the phrases in the Shema say. And I tell you that the preliminary reason is none other than the lack of understanding his providence over his creations. That we do not understand him properly is what causes us to make these mistakes. My commentary. When reading the above paragraph, one would feel that our connection to the Creator needs to be only on an intellectual level. If we understand the Creator, then we would be close to him. This is not fully correct. The Creator is more than the level of intellect. Please keep this in mind. Section 43. If, for example, the Creator were to establish open providence with his creations, in that, for instance, anyone who eats a forbidden thing would suffocate on the spot, and anyone who performs a mitzvah would discover such wonderful pleasures in it, like the finest delights in this corporeal world, then what fool would even contemplate tasting a forbidden thing, knowing that he would immediately lose his life? Just as one does not consider jumping into a fire. Also, what fool would leave any mitzvah without performing it as quickly as possible, just as one who cannot retire from or linger with a great corporal pleasure that comes to his hand without receiving it as swiftly as he can? Thus, if providence were open before us, all the people in the world would be completely righteous. My commentary. What is not said in these two paragraphs is that what is being described is truly the effect of doing each mitzvah. Why do you not know the truth of this statement? Why does the Creator not teach us this? I have made the statement to you in other classes that this world is a perfect world, perfectly just. And we look around and you have chaos in your life, but you're a good person, so obviously that chaos can't be perfectly just. Yet I'm saying that it is perfectly just. This is the way the world was created, perfectly just, and it hasn't changed. But we don't see it. We don't trust it. When our sages tell us that when you eat something that is not kosher, you are dying, you are dead. but I'm still walking around. I don't notice anybody who doesn't eat kosher dropping dead. But Rabbi Ashlag is telling us here very clearly, when you eat something that's not kosher, you're dropping dead. But this world is an illusion. And we don't see it. We don't believe that that statement is true. We don't work on that. It's just not part of our reality. But it is the truth. When you do a mitzvah, the pleasure that you receive is so overwhelming that you can't function for days. You're so connected to that consciousness of pleasure, there's no way to move. But we don't believe that. We get up every morning and we like to fill in and we do certain actions that are misvote. And it's mundane, it's commonplace, God forbid. How do we understand these truths that sages are teaching us, and why don't we read it as it is written? Section 44. Thus you see that all we need in our world is open providence. If we could see cause and effect, which is the meaning of open providence, if I could see the pleasure I receive from a mitzvah, I'd run to do a mitzvah. And if I could see the pain and suffering and chaos that comes from doing an avera, a sin, I'd run away from sin. But I don't see it because the providence is not open. If we had open providence, all the people in the world would be completely righteous. Actually, they are. We just don't see it. They haven't reached their correction yet. They would also cleave to him with absolute love, for it would certainly be a great honor for any one of us to befriend and fall in love with our heart and our soul and cleave unto him without losing even a minute of being separated from him. However, since this is not so, and a mitzvah is not rewarded in this world, and those who defy his will are not punished before our eyes, but the Creator is patient with them, and moreover, sometimes think the opposite, as it is written, "Behold, such are the wicked, and they that are always at ease increase riches. Hence, not all who want to take the Lord may come and take. Instead, we stumble every step of the way, until, as our sages wrote about the verse, I have found one man out of 1,000, that 1,000 enter a room, and one comes out to teach. Thus, understanding his providence is the reason for the very good. It's the reason for every good, and the lack of understanding is the reason for every bad. It turns out that this is the axis that all the people in the world circle, for better or for worse. My commentary, this section is very hard to accept. I hope it clarifies later on so that we will understand it. But it is very hard to accept that this world is perfectly just. It's very hard to accept that the pleasure of a mitzvah is so overwhelming that we can't function. That the pain and suffering of an avera, of a sin, is so onerous that we would never do it if we could perceive it. Section 45. When we closely examine the attainment of providence that people come to sense, we find four kinds there. Each and every kind receives specific providence by the Creator in a way that there are four discernments in the attainment of providence here. In fact, they are only two. There is concealment of the face and revelation of the face, but divided into four. There are two discernments in providence of concealment of the face, which are single concealment and concealment within concealment, and two discernments in the providence of the revelation of the face, providence of reward and punishment, and eternal providence. My commentary. Section will become clear shortly. Right now, we are using terms that are not clearly defined. To start this understanding of the terms, let us wait until Rabbi Ashlag defines them later on in his essays. And he actually starts in section 46, which is on the next page if we go back. But I'm going to call this a short class because the next four or five sections are really defining these terms of what is providence, what is concealment of the face, what is concealment of the face, what is reward and punishment, because it's not a term that we accept to use. Rabbi Ashlag doesn't use it. He uses the Hebrew terms that the people who translated it say are translating it as reward and punishment. But it is not the Hashem, it's not God that Rabbi Ashlag called, you know, was close to, that he relates to us. There is no reward and there is no punishment. There is only cause and effect. But there is cause and effect, and then there is this thing called eternal providence, eternal reward, eternal cause. We don't understand these terms. And if you don't understand the term, you can't understand what you're talking about. You can't understand what the goal is. Rabbi Ashlag is famous for his method of starting out with terms that he doesn't define and then slowly running a circle to define them until when he completes the definitions and he completes the discussion, we're right back where we began, but with a complete understanding. And we will find that to be true when we finish this Hakdama. There'll be things we don't understand, but just means we have to read it again because we missed the parts that relate to that understanding. Does anybody have any questions? No questions about Sukkot?
I was wondering, you mentioned about hanging the seven species in the Sukkah. Would pictures be okay of those seven species?
The answer is yes, they're better than not hanging them. But the best thing would be to take the species and put them in a plastic bag, which protects it from the insects. And
in other words, all of them in one bag?
All in one bag? I used to do it in seven different bags, but you can do it in more than, you know, all in one. I used to take a little those little bottles of Kedem grape juice. And that was the wine that I would put it in a plastic bag, tie it to the string, and hang it from the stuff. Take the plastic bag with barley and put a few grains in it, and then seal it up and tie it with the string to the stuff. You will be amazed at the difference in the energy when you do that. It really isn't difficult. If you need to do it with a picture, go ahead. It's better than not having it.
Well, it's just I have individual little pictures of those, and I just wondered if I could punch a hole and hang them that way. But I can do the other two.
And there's nothing wrong in doing both. The idea is to make the sukkah your home. Mm-hmm. And how would you decorate your home? You're going to have food in your home. And you're going to have pictures in your home because you want a beautiful home. Don't think of the sukkah as a booth. Think of the sukkah as your home. Think of these things as the decoration. But realize that they're the antenna that's drawing the energy of chesed that you can tap into with the hakafot, that you can tap into with the waving of the lulav and etrog.
Did you put them in a corner or just...
No, I put them all over.
Different.
I usually just put one set of the seven. But in a larger, like a group sukkah, I would do two or three sets and have them all over the roof. Mm-hmm. And people used to be amazed because nobody thought of doing that. You know, they didn't think of bringing the seven species and what that represented. And then always, whenever you hang, you know, the people would hang pomegranates, you know, real pomegranates. And then by the sixth or seventh day, you have insects all over the pomegranate. So it's really not a happy place to be sitting under. But if you put the pomegranate in a plastic bag, there's no insects that ever bother it. And when you eat that pomegranate, that is a taste that you will never forget.
Well, we do that.
But when you
we have to buy them at this season. We have to buy them at this season of the year in order to have them for Tu B'Shvat. Because we don't see them at that time of the year.
Yeah, But you'll see the amazing difference in energy when you put it in your sukkah, and I let it absorb the energy of Chesed during the week of Sukkot. Mm-hmm. Whenever you do, there's a minhag, a custom for women who are newly married, who want to become pregnant, to eat the etrog directly by biting onto the spittoon, biting onto the little pit thing that, you know, looks a little bit like a male organ. And when she does that, I've seen many women get pregnant within the next year.
Well, I took the seeds 1 year. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
I've also, having waved the lulav and etrog, most people, they'll take the etrog and they'll make it into a jam or something. But the lulav and the other two species, you know, they don't know what to do with it. So some people hold it and use it and put it in the fire on Pesach when they're burning their chametz. They burn it then, so they hold it for the 6 months. And other people just save it. I've had a lulav that has not gone bad for 14 years. I don't mean a lulav. I mean an etrog. It hasn't been in a refrigerator. It's been on a shelf in an apartment that didn't have air conditioning. And it's still good?
The ones I save stay good for a couple of years, but then they gradually shrink up. But one year I took seeds and planted.
It's the same issue of the bodies that deteriorate in the graves. The Tzaddikim bodies don't deteriorate because they're holy. They've been converted to holiness. When you do the etrog and the lulav waving properly with the proper consciousness, you're drawing holiness to that element. It's not going to dry up after a few years. Of course, it's not easy to maintain that consciousness. It's not easy to create that condition. But that's really what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. 1 year I planted the seeds and really got a big tree. They're full of thorns, real long thorns. But it didn't bear fruit for 10 years. But on the 10th year, it bore fruit. And there were 22 large etrogreen. And just bringing them in the kitchen kept the whole house smelling just wonderfully.
Understood.
And then that was a neat thing.
I don't know if you're aware of the minhag for the circumcision to take the foreskin and bury it in the earth. But I did that for my oldest grandson's circumcision. Where I was the sun doc. And my son-in-law was laughing at me. It's not part of his path. He's not ready to follow it, et cetera, et cetera. But my daughter teaches, she's a principal in a Reform synagogue with the responsibility to educate Jewishly 500 children. So she had the circumcision. I was the son doc, and they gave me the foreskin. And they had this place in their garden that they had repeatedly tried to grow something, and it repeatedly died because there was no sun shining in that corner of the garden because of the geometry of their house and their roof overhang and so forth. So I asked him where he wanted me to plant this foreskin, and he pointed to that place, and I said, you're going to have a fully grown tree. And he said, no, there's no sun, et cetera, et cetera. So I planted the foreskin, which is the energy of the mitzvah. He had 8 blooms on a rose bush in that area that had never bloomed since he had had the house. And he has a tree that has not yet borne fruit, but will soon. Same idea. We don't see, but we think we see. And that's the important thing, is to let go of that illusion and start looking for the real cause. Any other questions? Have a beautiful week. Tomorrow night at 8:30 is the Advanced Reincarnation class. I hope you'll join us. And I hope you have a beautiful Sukkot, a joyous Sukkot. Shalom, you all.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Thank you.
Thank you.